And so today we continue in our series on prosperity, based primarily on the book Open Your Mind to Prosperity by Catherine Ponder. Reverend Ponder defines prosperity as more than financial plenty. She defines it as peace of mind, harmony, wholeness and healing, and love. Actually, she defines prosperity as the fulfillment of all of our desires. And Reverend Ponder advocates that we achieve this prosperity in all areas of our lives by first cleansing our minds. Remember, first of all, giving up thoughts and beliefs that we might be allowing to block our flow, the flow of good in our lives. And then after cleansing, Ponder suggests some specific strategies. We talked about two of them last week. One, through writing, and two, through picturing, our power of imagination. Did anyone try making lists last week and or doing a prosperity map? I see some hands. Good. Well, we're going to offer one more strategy today, and you can continue to work on this mentally creating prosperity before it manifests in the outer. So the third way that Catherine Ponder says we can mentally create our prosperity is through the power of the spoken word. She writes, by first listing your desires and then picturing them, you gather the substance, which she calls gold dust, of the universe on the invisible plane. But it is through the spoken word that you form the substance into definite results, giving it birth in the visible world. Catherine Ponder tells the story in her book of a woman who, close to Christmas time, just had a need for more prosperity so that she could buy Christmas presents for all of her friends. So one of her good friends said to her, well, there's an affirmation I know of, and the affirmation is, I have plenty to share and to spare. Why don't you say that over and over again? So the woman did that. She kept saying, I have plenty to share and to spare. And as it turned out, the woman did have plenty, but it all came in the form of holiday fruitcakes. She had plenty to share and spare, but it was all fruitcakes, no money. So because of that, Catherine Ponder says, if you would have more prosperity come to you, speak definite words that will bring it. Now, if we have trouble identifying our desires, and sometimes we do, we can go into prayer and meditation to discern the overall purpose in our lives. And Ponder says when we do that, and we have patience in doing that, the people, the events, and the circumstances will manifest in our minds. So regarding the spoken word, Ponder notes that the words utter and outer have similar roots. What you utter becomes outer in your world. So we have to be careful what we utter, don't we? Our words are creative. They are filled with power. They bring about change. And divinely inspired words come from a place deep within. As our Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore writes, words are the vehicles through which ideas make themselves manifest. Words that have in them the realization of divine life and our oneness with life actually create results in the outer world. We are quickened. Charles Fillmore loves that word, quickened. It means awakened. We are quickened, awakened by spiritual faith, and our outer words are endowed with power. Now, I know a lot of you remember, we did a series not too long ago on the creative process, and I know you remember in Genesis, in the beginning, God created the universe with the power of the word. The Creator said, let there be light, and there was light. And then at each step of the process, God said, let it be, and so it was. In How I Use Truth, Emily Cady writes, God, infinite power, might have thought about those things until doomsday, but it took the definite let there be to bring forth order out of chaos and to establish visible results, even from the thoughts and desires of an infinite, omnipotent creator. So interpreted metaphysically, part of the meaning of this is There's great truth in the power of the word, the power of the proclaimed word. And throughout his ministry, Jesus demonstrated this power again and again. One particular healing incident gives us a clue to how important Jesus thought this power of the word was. Remember the centurion, the Roman centurion, who comes to Jesus for healing of his seriously ill servant? Now, rabbinic law considered the house of a Gentile to be unclean for a faithful Jew, so Jesus really was not supposed to go to the centurion's house. However, Jesus being Jesus, offers to come to the house anyway. But the centurion says, "No, you don't have to come to my house. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I am a man of authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And I say to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, I say, do this, and he does it." And then Jesus looked at all the people gathered around, and he said, "Truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such faith as this centurion." And at that hour, the servant was healed. So that's the can be the power of the word. And Jesus has that power, and Jesus told us, "These things that I do, you also can do." So if you've been in New Thought or Unity for a while, you know that we use that creative power of the word through a strategy that we call denials and affirmations, right? Unity co-founder Myrtle Fillmore wrote, "Denials and affirmations are angels that guard the door of our consciousness." Now we know that the denial is a statement that erases false beliefs and appearances, temporary appearances, from our minds, from our consciousness. An example of a denial around prosperity could be, "I release the idea that divine abundance is limited." Just letting that go from our minds. And then immediately we need to replace it with an affirmation. An affirmation is a declaration of spiritual truth through which we condition our consciousness. The affirmation now does not make a thing true, but it simply claims what is already true in the absolute realm. An example of an affirmation following that denial could be, "I am the rich child of a loving father, so I dare to prosper." Let's do that denial and affirmation together. Can you do it with me? Ready? First, I release the idea that divine abundance is limited. I am the rich child of a loving father, so I dare to prosper. Now, denials create a vacuum in the consciousness that needs to be immediately filled. Did you ever pull a weed? What happens? 15,000 weeds grow in its place, right? I mean, that's the way it works. So we have to fill that space of the weed we've created, and we do that with the affirmation. It's really important to always to follow a denial with an affirmation because, you know, the universe doesn't like a vacuum, and it will be filled. And Jesus about this told us during the Sermon on the Mount, one of my favorite of Jesus' sayings, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no." Catherine Ponder writes, "You can work wonders in your life by affirming prosperity for just 5 minutes a day." And in your bulletin is a list of affirmations around prosperity on the front there by Catherine Ponder, on the back by Edwin Gaines. So I invite you to take those home and try that this week. Try just 5 minutes a day affirming one or two or however many you choose of these affirmations. And let's practice one. This is on your list, but I love this one. Let's practice this one together. I'll read it to you first. "God is my supply and my unlimited abundance now." Now, with all the power, not in a namby-pamby way, but in all the power you know how to muster, let's affirm that together. Ready? "God is my supply and my unlimited abundance now." Now, by using prosperity affirmations like this, we're not trying to make God, Spirit, Divine Mind give us anything. We are simply opening our minds to the abundance that is already ours. And Ponder also tells us that there's tremendous power in affirming the Lord's Prayer. She says, instead of taking it for granted, sometimes we breeze through it automatically. Instead of doing that, we can speak or sing, I might add, the words over and over, slowly, deliberately, and we will feel the energizing, transforming effect in our lives. Now, when Jesus' disciples asked him to teach them how to pray, he warned them against making a display of their praying in order to be seen by others, like the Pharisees did. He told them to retire to their inner chamber and pray to the Father who sees in secret and rewards openly. Then Jesus added, "After this manner, therefore, pray." Charles Fillmore tells us that Jesus had no intention of giving us a prayer to end all prayers. He was not telling us what to pray, but rather how to pray. And according to traditional translations that I imagine a lot of us grew up with, the Lord's Prayer is a series of petitions, isn't it? But in many versions following the true Greek language, as in one is Fenton's translation, and that was published in 1931, in many of these translations, the Lord's Prayer is a series of affirmations. We know that the prayers of Jesus were always full of strong affirmations. He made big claims on God, and he demonstrated them. So in Discover the Power Within, Eric Butterworth gives us a synthesis of what he considers the best translations available today. I'm going to show this to you. The parentheses are mine, but the rest of this is from Eric Butterworth's work. And we're going to work with his translation during our meditation today. But here's what he says the Lord's Prayer really sounded like. "Our Father in heaven," meaning within, "hallowed, holy, is your name. Your kingdom is come. Your will is done on earth as it is in heaven, in the outer as well as in the inner. You give us this day and every day our daily bread, our substance. You always forgive, even as we forgive. You would never leave us in temptation, but are the very power of deliverance from limitation. Yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever." So, doesn't that sound a little bit more like what Jesus might say? It just aligns with so many of his teachings and so many of his prayers. And finally, regarding the power of the spoken word, Ponder reminds us that casual words also have power. You know, those words that sometimes just fly out of our mouths without our really thinking about them? I found this wonderful little quote from on Pinterest from Red Quotes. com.com, and it says, "A careless word may kindle strife. A cruel word may wreck a life. A timely word may level stress, but a loving word may heal and bless." And I believe this was first from the Buddha, although it's a lot of people are giving credit for it. "Open your mind before you open your mouth." Good advice, right? And when we open our minds and align what's in our minds with the spiritual truths, then the right thing does come out of our mouths. So, the power of the word. Now, for those of you who purchased books and are following along in our series, we're moving into chapter 6, which Ponder begins by saying, "By now, your gold dust formula for prosperity is becoming clear. You've cleansed your mind. You've mentally created your prosperity in writing, pictures, and the spoken word. Now, in order to open your mind to the omnipresent abundance of God, this we need to get our minds in the mindset of receiving." This is about receiving. And so Ponder writes, "There's another way to give your prosperity a permanent, enduring basis." And she says this is the most mystical and fascinating prosperity principle of all, and it's the principle of tithing. Now, I know tithing has been called the terrible T word, right? It has been. And honestly, it took me, it gives some of us a visceral reaction. And I'll be really honest, it took me a long time in Unity before I really began to understand the principles around tithing. I really used to think it was a trick devised by money-hungry preachers. And if you ever think that, something like this: "Pastor Ron decided to quit beating around the bush. Your tithe is crucial to my retirement plans." I've been there. I admit of being there. I also heard a story about two men who were shipwrecked on a desert island. And the one man, Jonathan, was just running around the island going, "Help, help, no food, no water, we're going to die, we're going to die." While his friend Andrew was just lounging under a palm tree, sunning himself. So Jonathan said to Andrew, "What's the matter of you with you? Don't you realize how serious this is? We're going to die." And Andrew answered, "Oh no, we're not going to die. I make $100,000 a week." And his friend said to him, "And just tell me how that's going to help you in this situation?" Andrew said, "Well, that's easy. I tithe on that $100,000 a week, and I assure you my pastor's going to find us." Both of the story and the cartoon really highlight what sometimes happens. Let's be honest. It does sometimes happen in churches around the concept of tithing. But the practice of tithing goes really way back to the Hebrew Bible, and really before that even. The classic reference is from Malachi 3:10, which says, "Bring the full tithe into the storehouse." No, I'm sorry, I got off. The tithing is the 10% of one's supply to the work of God. And Eric Butterworth says in his book, Spiritual Economics, it's often taught for the wrong reason, as our cartoon and our story exemplify. Eric Butterworth writes, "At the very outset, let us establish the point that tithing is an excellent practice strongly recommended to anyone who wants to develop a prosperity consciousness and change his or her life. However, some of the arguments made make tithing a gross materialization of a beautiful spiritual law." That's from Eric Butterworth in the book, Spiritual Economics. So now, the practice of tithing goes back to the Hebrew Bible. The classic reference is from Malachi 3:10. "Bring the full tithe into the storehouse, so that there may be food in my house, and thus put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts. See if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you a bountiful, overflowing blessing." Well, Butterworth says this is a beautiful statement. It's pure poetry, and who could take issue with it? However, history reveals, and I think this is very interesting, that an actual practice under Levitical law in the time of Malachi, the tithe was not a love offering, but an actual tax. In a religious form of government, a theocracy, it was used as revenue to support both the government and the church. And later, in early Israel, the tribe of Levi was singled out among the 12 tribes of Israel to be the priestly class. And because they were responsible for the upkeep of the temple and worship services, they did not get a portion of the land like all the other 11 tribes were given. Therefore, the other 11 tribes came together to support the Levites with 10% of their first fruits, finest grains, and best cattle. And the word tithe in Hebrew is the word for 10. And symbolically, it means increase, flow of increase. So there was really nothing voluntary about the Mosaic Code. It was strictly enforced, and in fact, violations were punishable by death in the day. So, now Jesus comes along, and tithing is still a form of this temple tax. It's still standard practice, and Jesus, as a Palestinian Jew, would certainly have tithed. Let's remember, though, throughout his ministry, Jesus made a distinction between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. He taught that obeying the letter of the law is a matter of physical action. It's something we do. Whereas obeying the spirit of the law requires us to have more than just outward actions. It requires an attitude of the mind, a matter of consciousness. And Jesus said, "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For the measure you use, it will be measured back to you." So although the tithing laws of the Hebrew Bible were coercive, Jesus taught the law of consciousness, that intention counts, and we always have the freedom of choice. We do receive as we give, but we have complete and utter freedom. So tithing really is a powerful spiritual principle, and it's a spiritual principle of prosperity also. New Thought books are full, and Catherine Ponder's books are no exception, full of testimonials about those who tithe and prosper, and many of us have found that in our own lives. Stories like this are inspiring. It's important, however, that we give our gifts along with our time and talents in the right consciousness. This means in the faith that God is our source. Reverend Gary Simmons says, source it, don't force it. I like that line. Source it, don't force it. Meaning, give in the mindset of plenty, not in the mindset of what he calls not enoughness. Spiritual giving is not a quid pro quo arrangement with the divine. There's no external deity looking down from above saying, okay, you tithe, you're going to be blessed. Okay, you didn't tithe, you're not going to be blessed. That's just not the way it works. Nobody gets anything withheld from the divine abundance of God. Tithing works because it increases our prosperity. And it increases our prosperity consciousness. It helps us shift our mindset. Eric Butterworth writes, God is the divine givingness of the universe. And created in God's image and likeness, we too are created to be divine givingness. Tithing is not an end, but a helpful means of simply getting us in a giving consciousness. And when Malachi refers to the whole tithe, Eric Butterworth says this means heart and soul giving. It means giving from all of us, not just our money. So when Jesus criticized the Pharisees for tithing without love, he could have meant tithes, that they tithe decimally, but not spiritually. So it's our spiritual consciousness around our gifts. And it has been said that the correct practice of tithing is more a matter of quality of thought and feeling than it is a quantity of money. And just so, I'm not sure that everybody knows this, but I think it's important to say it today, and that is First Unity Tithes. We tithe 10% of our income, usually to Silent Unity, to Unity Worldwide Ministries, and sometimes to other sources where we receive our spiritual nourishment. And the board does so on your behalf in a consciousness of gratitude and expectation of ever-unfolding good for our entire church and the community outside, knowing that tithing is a good investment because it puts First Unity in touch with the ceaseless flow of universal supply. And so when we accept that God is source all that is, we live in joyous gratitude for the blessings of our lives. We live and move and have our being in the divine flow, and we know that we are perfect channels for divine good. We develop a prosperity consciousness that generates positive energy that attracts us to ever-increasing manifestations of good. Jesus said, give and it will be given to you, because Jesus lived in total consciousness of God within, expressing as him. Consciousness of the presence of God is the truest, greatest prosperity. So as we work toward that with the power of the word, with the power of pictures, with the power of our giving, we just know that that is the key to permanent prosperity in every area of our lives, for it is total awareness of joy, love, power, and all good. And next week, we're going to pursue love and prosperity. For now, though, let's just take all of this into our hearts and souls as we prepare for prayer and meditation, knowing that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.